The Ensemble podcast is intended for professional financial advisors. This content is created in partnership with our sponsor, FIL Responsible Entity Australia Limited, AFSL 409 340, ABN 33148 059 009, and is limited to publicly available information. Before acting on any general advice, you should consider whether appropriate and obtain financial advice from a qualified financial advisor. Ensemble does not hold an AFS license and does not provide any financial advice or services or endorse any general advice. If a PDS or IM exists, you should obtain a copy and review it thoroughly before making a decision.
Everyone, Jamie McIntyre here. This Ensemble series is all about the great wealth transfer. Throughout this series, you'll get insights from planners in our community and the team at Fidelity who have produced significant research on the great wealth transfer. I'm sure you will enjoy this series and get a greater understanding of how you can help in the great wealth transfer.
Fidelity has been investing globally for their clients for more than 50 years and 20 years here in Australia. With one of the world's largest investment research teams, they conduct more than 20,000 company meetings each year to uncover unique investment insights that others may miss. Fidelity offers a range of Australian, global and regional managed funds, and you can also access their investment expertise through our active ETFs on the ASX. Invest with local insights, powered by global strength.
Hello everyone, my name is Jamie McIntyre and I am the host of today's podcast. I'm a 25-year financial planner and specialise in retirement advice, and I'm looking forward to today's podcast and sharing with you all the insights from research that has been completed regarding the great wealth transfer in Australia and share some insights into the mindset of clients. We have two guests today, Simon Glazier from Fidelity International and Harry Mantzoratos, our financial planner guest. A little bit about Simon. Simon is the head of wholesale sales at Fidelity International. He has 20 years' experience across financial services. He joined Fidelity in March 2020 and is responsible for leading the sales and distribution team efforts of Fidelity International across the Australian wholesale market. In today's podcast, Simon is going to share with us the insights that Fidelity have uncovered in their research around the great wealth transfer in Australia and the opportunity for not only clients, but advisors and how they can help. Welcome to the podcast, Simon.
Thank you, Jamie. Pleasure to be here.
Our advisor guest today is Harry Mantzoratos. He is a chartered accountant, financial planning specialist, certified financial planner, and SMSF specialist advisor. With his diverse skill set, Harry is able to think outside the box to ensure clients' financial positions, whether they be complex or simple, they are optimized. Welcome to the podcast, Harry.
Thank you, Jamie.
Great to have you here, Harry. And let's kick off with you, Harry. Tell us a bit about yourself and your experiences with families you work with that want to leave a significant inheritance for their kids.
Sure. So I'm currently, my role here at Much More Than Money is as senior advisor. In addition, I'm a director and chairman of the board of Much More Than Money. We've got offices in Canberra and Sydney. But I've had extensive experience, a bit like yourself, Jamie, over 20 years, dealing with various clients of various complexity, and inevitably the topic of how what to do with our legacy with money when we pass away comes up as a discussion point. There are some challenges in the discussions that you have with people.
There's lots of challenges in the discussions we have with people, Harry. I think that the nature of what we do, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely. It sometimes can be a bit of an awkward conversation to have with people, just given the wide ranges of backgrounds and cultural differences amongst groups of people. For some people, it's an easy topic to talk about. For some, it's not so easy. And look forward to exploring some of those during our chat today.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think we'll be able to reference Simon in the research, and you insert the word there, cultural differences. And prior to us jumping on today, we've had some conversations about some of the experiences you've had in the cultural space. I'm still with you, Harry. Tell us a little bit about your experience from a cultural differences perspective in your practice with the clients that you've worked with?
Yeah, sure, Jamie. I had given it some thought, and I thought it'd be useful to just give a bit of an overview of some of the differences. Initially, one that comes to mind is an elderly lady. She's in her late 80s. She's a widow. Her parents are German, but she's a child of the Second World War, and her parents were born and bred through lived through the Depression. So a lot of her views of money, etc., are affected by her upbringing and her background. We have a number of clients who are same-sex couples, and I think that might be of interest to some of the listeners about some of the issues that come across and the thoughts there. Couples in their 70s, you know, fourth-generation Australian husband, first-generation Italian background lady, New Zealand-born husband with the wife being Australian. There's an Asian lady who's single, has a son, and it's very important to her to leave funds to her son in a protected fashion. And growing part of the community across the last 20 plus years that I've been seeing is the blended family. You know, clients who've been married more than once, kids from one marriage brought into another relationship. What that means now is that when you're talking to a couple, you're talking to the couple as and their kids as in directly from this relationship, or what about the kids from other relationships? So there's a few interesting case studies there.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of case studies in there. I'm not sure we'll get through all of those, Harry, today. And look, the term we've used is cultural differences, and you used a word, I think it was different experiences in life was really what you were reflecting. You commented on the German lady who's come through the Depression era, so that influences the way she sees money, no doubt. And why don't you tell us a little bit about that German client and, you know, what her experiences are and how that relate to how she wants to work with her inheritance in the future.
Yep. So with this particular lady, she did have three sons. Unfortunately, one of the sons passed away in a motorbike accident maybe about 8 years ago. The remaining two sons are in their 60s and they've got children. So this lady has children, adult children, grandchildren, also great grandchildren. And because she's a product of Second World War and the parents from the Great Depression, she's always worried about that she's going to lose the money, that, you know, money's going to disappear, etc. So is her money going to last her to life expectancy and beyond has always been a discussion. Reality is she's got more money from investments, etc., that she could possibly spend across the years. She's been a little bit on the frugal side, which reflects probably the upbringing as well. So she's been careful not to spend a lot of the funds that she did have, but she's been also wanting to help her sons in terms of getting them set up. One of the sons happens to be living overseas, and one is living here in Australia. And the one living overseas, she's provided financial support in different ways, etc., across the years. More recently, because of her age, she's moved into a retirement village. And discussions that I've been having with her was, does she want to see the actual benefit of the funds before she passes away? So we started discussing advanced estate planning. So as she was moving into a retirement village, we've now engaged, so I facilitated the discussion with a solicitor to look to move property assets out of her name into one of the son's name. That was a priority for him. And because the son that's living overseas wasn't going to get use of it out of that asset, she's actually passed, cashed in some of the investments, and we've made allocations to him in advance. And there's more than enough funds to keep her comfortable in her remaining years as well.
Yeah, and I think there's two parts that the research supports there. We've talked about cultural differences in some ways, but also that nest egg mentality that's quite common for people of this lady's age. Not that she's not because of German and the Depression era, but that you'd find that you get that a lot in Australia as well from Australian clients of that age group.
Definitely. So the whole concept is, will the funds that I have accumulated across my years last me till the end, so to speak. Will I have enough money? Seems to be a common theme. Although what I'm finding a lot about clients who happen to be either affluent or perhaps in that high net wealth space, the reality is they just can't actually spend the money given their historical spending patterns, but they still have that fear of, will my money last across the years?
Yeah, they've always had to preserve their money and be protective of it because of their experience as well. Simon, what does the research talk to? Well, I suppose in a couple of ways there is that nest egg mentality and also the cultural differences.
Yeah, it's a really interesting discussion. And Harry, you make a great point about, you know, we're all products of our experience and that differs from people to people, right? And, you know, this nest egg mentality, just to really briefly recap on the research, it was a survey of 1,500 Australians focusing across generations from the viewpoint of those wanting to pass on a legacy, but also looking at those potentially receiving legacies in the future and what the preferences and what the perceptions of that was. But 4 in 5 of the survey participants admit to having a nest egg mentality. So what does that mean, right? And Harry, you made a great point, exactly right, that in the early stages of retirement, there's a fear that we don't have enough money. So we underspend. We don't spend the money that we've saved in the accumulation phase in those early stages of retirement. But there's a tipping point for when you become an experienced retiree, you shift from having that fear of not having enough to then wanting to maintain a level to pass on. And that point of shift, that shifting point is different for every person in retirement. But this nest egg mentality is definitely alive and well in Australia, but it does change over time, as I say. And in terms of those cultural differences, through the survey, we found that those with Asian heritage put the passing on of a legacy of higher importance, almost found it as their, or thought it was their responsibility rather than something that they would like to do. So there's an inherent kind of, I suppose, show of their experience and their cultural differences to the rest of us here in Australia, and put a greater level of importance on passing on that legacy to the next generation. But again, important to note that it is more than just money. There's cultural themes that they would like to pass on. And quite often it's more than just their super savings. So the complexity is definitely there, which is where a huge opportunity arises for the financial advisors.
Yeah, I think there's some really great points there too, Simon, to expand on. I like the terminology of experienced retiree, and I think I'll circle back and we can have a good chat about that one. But I think when we talk about nest egg mentality, most of the people in this nest egg mentality have come from a place of having no money at some point in their younger life. So the pain of not having money, I think it leans into them making sure they protect what they have, or, you know, preserve it, or whichever words we might use there. And maybe my generation, the generations below, we haven't experienced that pain of or as significantly as the prior generations. And the pain of not having money, yeah, as I say, is not experienced by the younger generations. Australia's a pretty wealthy country. And if anything, the younger generations want to get their hands on some of that money a bit earlier, don't they, to happily spend it?
Yeah, I think you're right there, Jamie. There's an element of the people that create the wealth there. They've obviously sacrificed to do that. They spent less than what they've earned, and they've been prudent or wise in their investments. And so as they're moving into that retirement phase, they're keen to preserve and protect it. But then they do look at the statistics that are coming through in our communities, where so many relationships don't last the course of time. The advent of de facto relationships and what that means to accessing assets, and when people split up, you know, the splitting of assets. I'm aware of clients who, as they've come to see me, and so it ends up being a hot button. The whole estate planning ends up being a hot button because they have helped their child to buy the first property, so to speak, only to see that relationship split or divorce, and half or more of the money go outside of the bloodline. And that ends up talking to strategies as to how you might protect the assets in upon death, you know, the use of bloodline trusts or testamentary trusts and the like, try and preserve and keep the assets in the family.
Yeah, and that's probably a part of Mystic mentality is an element of control. So it's not lost outside of the family bloodlines as well. Is that fair to say, Harry, that that's a focus of the nest egg mentality type of person?
Yeah, definitely, Jamie. The if they're worried about what their kids might do with the money, they're infinitely more worried about someone outside the family potentially accessing the dollars. So they're keen to typically do what they can to keep the assets in the bloodline. That also talks to whether people want to undertake what I call advanced estate planning, or waiting until the person passes away and then they receive the assets.
Yeah, Harry, how do you encourage your clients, new clients, existing clients, to try and break down their nest egg mentality to some degree and be in a position where they can give some money with a warm hand rather than a cold heart? What sort of techniques do you use to encourage your clients to potentially give more whilst they're alive?
Jamie, that's a good question. What I find is every client, we always have an initial and ongoing values discussion. So what's important to the client about money? What's important about life? What's important? What's important to them? And over time, sometimes these things do evolve. In the terms of the from a money perspective, there's this term that I sometimes refer to as having sufficient money. And once people understand that they have enough resources, assets to provide them a sufficient income or cash flow to fund their desired lifestyle, anything over and above that becomes something that it's easier to have discussions around what they might choose to do with that money. And that leads to potentially a greater openness to actually have those conversations to pass some of that wealth ahead of passing away or advance estate planning. Yeah.
Simon, over to you. Give us a few more insights around the research and just some more general overview of what the research is telling us.
Yeah. And again, Harry, you hit on some really interesting points. And I think that notion of passing on a legacy with warm hands or a cold heart is, a really interesting one. And through the survey, we found, and this is reflective of the nest egg mentality, that as people age, they're actually more likely to pass more of their assets on after they pass. So again, this is almost like this hoarding of the cash, to your point, Harry, around sufficient money. It's helping clients, I think, understand what that is. Because if we look at some of the reasons why people would like to pass on a legacy, so, you know, their thoughts and feelings, the cultures, what they want to actually pass on, there's a few points in here that have come out through the survey that isn't about money, to your point. Expressing gratitude and love for them. Like, you can only do that with warm hands, right? That was called as the second highest reason for passing on a legacy. And it's against what we found in the survey, that as we age, again, we pass on more after we pass. So that discussion and constant checking and assessment of the reasons, you know, why you want to pass on a legacy and then what is a sufficient level of income in retirement is a really important one. So it's quite an opposing view. So on one hand, you've got that nest egg mentality prevailing, but on the other hand, you want to experience the benefits of passing on whatever legacy you choose, right, while you're still around. So again, it's not, these things aren't one size fits all. It's not set and forget, and it's different for every person. But obviously, money comes into it. The primary reason, or the thing that best describes the benefit for passing on a financial legacy, is to give the next generation greater financial security, supporting them to get ahead in the property market. Right, these things are pretty clear, and we know. But the other underlying you know, thoughts and feelings are very strong in terms of why people want to leave a legacy.
Yeah, you talk about sort of those conflicting things in there, Simon, of the nest egg mentality cohort, in the sense that they want to give, but they what I'm reading into that is they don't know how to give and they need some type of intervention or some support or professional advice or working with a professional to help them figure that out.
100%. And even if you think about and some of the survey responses from a cultural perspective, again, those with Asian heritage have almost like a higher propensity to want to pass on a legacy, but have a less understanding of necessarily how to do it.
Yep.
So in terms of it,
I would echo that, Simon. I mentioned earlier that I have an Asian lady as a client, and it's very important for her to leave assets in a protected fashion to her son. She happens to be a lawyer by profession, and in her circle of friends and family, she's the person that everyone goes to for advice. You know, and when it came to having discussions around estate planning with her, it was quite a challenge for her to come up with, you know, if something happened to her, who would she actually trust to look up to? You know, her son at the moment is age 12, and so who would be the right people to look after the money? You know, because all these people around her, they get her for advice. But it's very, very, very important that she has the right people in place and the right structures in place to look after, protect the assets and leave it for her son. So I echo that research and that you're talking about.
And you're right, Harry. In terms of that example you gave about, you know, the partner splitting and 50% of the family assets going outside the bloodline, it's a reflection of the level of complexity that we're dealing with here. And some of the other findings is, in terms of that passing on legacy, I think half the respondents, or just under half the respondents, experienced something that changed the plan.
Mm.
So again, it isn't a set and forget. So whether that be a separation, divorce, an illness, or something along those lines, that complexity is there. But also in terms of the help required. And I think about what had historically been in the realms of a family office, i.e. tax structures, fully established estate plan. That is now a requirement for most of us, right, that do want to pass on a legacy. So, you know, what was a lot easier 10 years ago, 15 years ago, is not the same today.
And on the topic of the cultural generational differences, you know, I'm going back a few decades, but back in the 90s when I was at KPMG and I was doing my professional year to become an accountant, et cetera, across the years we had a number of people join the firm who were from multi-generational wealthy families, Australian families. And the thing that I still remember to this day was almost without fail, they all were very salt of the earth people. There were no airs and graces. The families, if I mentioned the names, and I won't, of course, but if I mentioned the names of household names, then you just knew they came from money, but there were no airs and graces. And the car that they would drive, they took out a personal loan. They rented in modest homes. Any holidays, they funded. And what the message that I got out of there, and I'll take it into today's conversation, but you know, it was important for people to allow their children to not declaw them, not take away the will and the willingness and the hunger to be successful in their own right by just lavishing them with wealth, if you like, you know, making things too easy. So, Jamie, to the point about giving things with warm hands, there's a balancing act of lifetime when you talk to clients. They want to help, but they don't want to help with a way to make it too easy for people. And I'm happy to share some of the techniques that we end up using with that, if time permits.
Oh, look, Harry, I'd agree with that in my experience. It's not, I suppose, we're using the word inheritance and a few other things. We're not really getting into the more specific detail. I agree with you. It's a small amount of the giver's money. It's that's going to make some impact in the receiver's hands with that warm hand. And, you know, let's talk about clients that maybe for a term that sit in middle Australia, right? They've got a little bit more than they need. I wouldn't call them their high net wealth. I think they all have the desire to underpin their children a little bit, but they still have similar desires to the high net wealth as well, that they don't want to make it too easy for them either. Mm. They need to learn from the school of hard knocks and learn from life experiences of what life kind of can throw at you. I want to stay in that for a moment, Harry. Tell us about some of those higher net wealth children of those families. And I want to dig into the mindset of those kids, and you know, what are their expectations around what the future looks like from a future inheritance point of view?
Yeah, good question. More often than not, we'll end up having sort of family counseling sessions with, so the parents, as an example, might be the main clients, but we'll end up meeting the younger children or the adult children as well. So it gives me an insight, gives me opportunity to understand the where they're coming from, etc. And that also allows me to so the children are looking for some financial assistance, and the parents are, in inverted commas, happy to provide it, but they don't want to go out of the bloodline, and they don't want the children taking the money and using it inappropriately. And so the discussions that we end up having sometimes is, I call it a bit like good cop, bad cop. You know, am I the good cop or bad cop? But I'll often say to the parents, as an example, look, what it sounds like you've got more than enough or sufficient money to help your son, daughter, etc. But rather than giving him the money, which is a historical thing, people give the money gift, perhaps what you should think about doing is actually lending your children money. Then they'll still have to go to the bank, borrow money to buy the home or the property, and you want them to feel the pain a bit. But you can lend them the money, and if you put the appropriate documentation, maybe have a caveat over the property, they can't sell the property and take the money and do something alternative with it. And if there was to be a split in the relationship, they can't take that share, that money that you've lent. You know, you've got security over the property, and that helps the parent and the child be able to understand where each other's coming from. And I say good cop, bad cop. You know, sometimes the child might have a partner, life partner, son, daughter, etc. Have a life partner. The life partner might get their nose out of whack. You know, hearing about that, they're not going to be given the money; it's going to be a loan. But that allows me to play the good cop, bad cop. You know, they can blame me as their advisor. I'm the one that suggested doing it. But ultimately, I'm protecting the legacy, the money, keeping it in the family.
That sounds like that's a pretty common strategy for you in high net wealth families.
And so-called middle, it is a high net worth strategy, but also it's some of the most, if people are wanting to, if it's important for them to help their children, so this is a values discussion, you know, they'll end up sacrificing something of theirs to help their children, if that makes sense. So, but they don't want to sacrifice it and see it go out of the bloodline. And it's like, well, how do I do this? So they're looking just for common sense, plain English type solutions. And it can work for middle Australia as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And what about more around the mindsets of any of the, let's call it the children that you've worked with of the wealth, whether it be high wealth, middle Australia, whatever. What's the sort of mindset of that Gen X, Gen Y that are likely to receive some money in the near future?
Yeah, a lot of them tend to have the mindset of wanting to pay down debt. So the parents want happy to help them to pay down debt. Sometimes there's a discussion around, well, if they're in a tight living situation, perhaps in an apartment, and they have young children, receiving an advance inheritance would allow them to sell the apartment and move into a standalone house. So upgrade the lifestyle, if you like, to be more comfortable with the young kids, etc. So there is this constant discussion, if you like, a little bit of attention, but coming up with the right way forward in terms of what's the intention of the money. As long as the parents can assess that it's not going to be used for inappropriate purposes, you know, I'm going to use the advanced inheritance to go for a round-the-world trip and blow it all, so to speak, the parents are generally happy to help the children.
Yeah, I think that's a good segue over to you, Simon, talking to the Rainbow's End research. And there's an expectation that paying down debt will form a significant part of this great wealth transfer.
Yeah, 100%, 100%, Jamie. I mean, Gen Y specifically, most likely to distribute a windfall into property, no doubt. It's sort of property and pay down a mortgage is in daylight in front of anything else. So that leg up in the property market, cost of living pressures is really evident through this survey. The other thing to note, I think, from Gen Y is the preferences, right, about how to manage their finances. And there's a few call outs here which kind of leads to the conclusion that Gen Ys make great clients. And just the question around the way you prefer to manage your investments and big picture finances from a generational perspective versus Gen X and baby boomers, Gen Y have a higher preference to get involved but need guidance. So this is a do it with me preference for Gen Ys, absolutely. And then compared to the notion of would rather do it themselves, baby boomers and Gen Xers is well and truly up there in terms of their primary preference. So again, that's just sort of one aspect of looking at Gen Ys as a potential future client and the longer term value. And the other point to call, and I'm keen to debate where we think this is coming from, but you know, the question in the survey was, if you were to receive significant financial help or inheritance from your family, where would you rely on advice for what best to do with it? Top answer, professional financial planner. Now, my question maybe to Harry and Jamie is, do you think that would have been the same 15 years ago? And what do we think has changed?
Oh, you go, Harry.
Look, I've always been very comfortable leaning into this area. I think maybe it has to do with just the background of being fairly comfortable with the tax and structures, et cetera, and the understanding of tenants in common, what the structures mean from an estate planning perspective, you know, family trust, super funds, death benefits, all that sort of thing. So talking to people as human beings, I find that, you know, I was probably talking about estate planning 20 years ago, 15 years ago, but I do believe it's become more prevalent just because of this, the understanding that this huge wealth transfer happening at the moment or is going to happen in the next decade or so.
Yeah, look, I'm sitting around your question there, Simon, of 15 years ago, where would people have lent towards going? Probably they would have started with their bank or their accountant, because that's who they had the strongest relationship with. And we know how some of those starting with the bank conversations had played out for people over the journey. So I think it's a really good, well, I suppose a reflection of the work that's gone into the financial planning profession over the past 15 years to be seen up at the top of that list, because I don't think we would have been seen anywhere near the top 15 years ago. But it also, some of the other parts of the research tell us that they aren't engaging with us either just yet. And I think if you think in the context of that question of who would you approach if you get it, I think there's a bit of work to do with those that are giving the money and the children before the money exchanges or hands through death, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And we've been fortunate enough to have a few discussions since the release of this research where there are some great examples out there of a lot of businesses working, you know, with their clients, the next generations across multiple layers of services. So it's really good. I mean, and on the reflection for that survey and the response, you know, I think it's a measure of the impact that financial planners have in market too, right? So Gen Ys have probably been the beneficiary of seeing their parents live a high quality of life in retirement, and that's been brought on or enhanced by their engagement of financial planners. So, you know, I think as well as the level of financial education generally has been lifting, and you know, I think we have a big role to play in that, and I think it's a reflection of that moving into a profession, which is all very, very positive.
I agree, and I think in over the last, I've been around 23-24 years, and the internet was only kind of getting going back then. And I'll use the word industry now, not profession. The industry protected a lot of information, and now it's all about sharing and openness, and that's probably a reflection of that answer that there's a lot of trust in financial planning now, because we are open, honest, and transparent now.
And probably just one thing I'd round out before we sort of maybe kick on to the next point. I don't know how we're going for time, but feels like we've been on for 5 minutes, but we've been on for a lot more. But just out the back of COVID, right, I think we all swung to digital. But again, one of the questions was around preferences in engagement and communication. And across the generations, it's very clear that in-person meetings and face-to-face engagement is the preferred, definitely the preferred method. So I know there's a lot of discussions around AI and that being the answer to a lot of problems out there. You know, given the feedback, it doesn't seem to be the case. You know, but from a Gen Y perspective, again, it's important to note that the multifaceted approach to communication and engagement is very important. So this generation will prefer in-person meetings, but they'll need emails, they'll need phone calls, they'll need text messages, video calls work, chat functions work. So as a business, as we evolve and really try and engage Gen Ys, it's important to have those multimedia engagement platforms ready and roaring to go.
I'd agree with that. Harry, I've got one more question for you, and I want to circle back to cultural differences or different cohorts of people. And you mentioned earlier one, I'll call it a cohort, same-sex couples.
Yep.
Tell me a little bit about your experience with same-sex couples and potentially around either nest egg mentality or around receiving money. Tell us about your experience on that.
Yeah, there's some interesting nuances that I'm happy to share. Look, most financial planners, advisors will undertake some level of modeling as an example. So as people are approaching retirement, if they're so-called retirement age 60 or 65 or whatever, you know, the modeling will take into account life expectancy. And according to the life expectancy tables, if you have a male and a female who are both, say, age 60 or 65, females are expected to live longer than males. Males, generally speaking, tend to slow down in later stage in life. This has been very general. Females tend to be fairly strong and more active, if you like, in later life. And so an example of this, there's two ladies in their 60s who, when we looked at their estate planning, all the nest egg mentality suffered. I've got enough money. Will I have enough? You know, should I work another year, 2 years? Am I okay? Will I be okay? That's very similar. But then when you're doing the projections, you're no longer just projecting. You're projecting for two people who are going to live longer than a male. You know, it's the money does need to last longer. And so when you're looking at doing projections as an example, you can't just go, oh, this is what I'm going to factor in. One might pass away. How can I say it earlier? The other one's going to expect it to live longer. They're both going to live longer. Generally speaking, because males tend to slow down, not all, but tend to slow down. You can tend to factor in a drop in spending patterns. But if they're both female, their spending patterns, because they're still active and they're traveling, et cetera, and they're doing things, it tends to be higher for longer. So there are two nuances, if you like, in that same-sex couple area that some people might not be aware of.
Yeah, that was a really interesting eye-opener for me, Harry, to just stop and hear you talk about that and listen and think, oh, yeah, we'll do modeling. And we've got the stock standard male-female modeling, and having two females who are going to live for longer, that brings a different overlay to your planning for them as well.
And look, you know, if these days same-sex couples, and I'm familiar with a couple, you know, can have children, and they don't need to have a biological person of the opposite sex to have a child, whether it's adopted or their own child. But in this case, you know, those technologies were not around, those options weren't around for them when they were younger. So there's no children, so to speak. So their priority is leaving money to charity and discussing, well, who will be the trustee, who's going to look after the funds after they both pass away, and looking at things like the New South Wales trustee looking after the funds and what charities, who's it going to be for, and all that sort of thing. So some interesting discussions around that as well, and the charging mechanism and cost benefit and whatever. So there's a whole stack of nuances there to explore.
Yeah, absolutely. And I could explore a lot of things today with both yourself, Harry, and also with you, Simon. I'm going to wrap it up and say thank you for some really cool input today. We looked at different lenses. We spoke about cultural differences. We spoke about nest egg mentality. And it was really great for me to hear the insights from you, Harry, who's a guy that's experienced across that accounting realm as well as the planning realm. And you've got a business that for me, it covers most areas. And I heard a theme that your clients like keeping money in the bloodlines, and I think that's the right way to go for all clients, really. So thanks, guys. A great episode. I think we really dug into client mindsets towards the wealth transfer today. And thanks for coming in today. Thanks, Harry.
Thank you, Jamie. Thank you, Simon.
Thanks, Harry. Thanks, Jamie. Thank you, guys. Good work, team.